Good evening, one and all. I know, halfway through January, over halfway through January, gone by so quick, hasn't it? And here we are, your host, Barry Eva, with another book and a chat. Well, I was talking to my guest before the show started, and we were talking about music and stuff like that. And it got me thinking, and this is something we've discussed before on the show, that it doesn't matter what sort of creative thing it is, there is a creative gene people have, be it whether they're sculptors, painters, musicians, writers, what have you. It's something there. Now, my guest, he doesn't just create in sort of one type thing. No. He can go from creating jewelry to poems to music to all sorts of stuff. And now he's written a book, and it's something that slightly different. I've never come across one before on the show, but we'll get to it when we get to it. But I better introduce my guest, haven't I? Because on the show I have the one and only Thomas Lane. Hi, Thomas, how you doing?
I'm fine. There may be a doppelganger out there. I don't know, but so far I'm the only one that
Well,
I know about.
the only other one I came across was one who won the Victoria Cross in the Second World War. But that's
Maybe a past lifetime.
I'm going to say it might be a past lifetime, but yes, you are. Let's talk about you first before we get on to your book, because as I said about this creative part, you sort of had an interesting life, shall I say? I mean, you've not just been there, done it. You got the t-shirt as well. You sort of influenced, I know, as we were talking before the show starts, by your poets and singers and stuff like that. People like Dylan and Leonard Cohen, who write about the landscapes they're in and relationships, all sorts of stuff. And but then you sort of gone from that. From doing your own music to doing poetry to, as I said, even an what you like a where are we? This was a roadie manager for a group and stuff like that. I mean, you've been there, and but all along, including like the paintings and everything, the arts and everything, it's been a creative path you've followed. Is this, is this just how you are, that doesn't matter what you've got that driving thing in your mind that you want to sort of create something to share with people?
It's mysterious. The whole process is mysterious. If you've talked to at least most of my writers and singers and whatever, it's just something that's there, and you don't know why. You just hope it continues. You don't know where the song comes from. You don't know where that sentence comes out. I deal a lot of intuition, so I let that speak first, and then I clean it up as it gets on the page. But yeah, I was a jock when I was a kid, and I was just, part regular boy. And then there was this other side of me that slowly got into gear. Ironically, one of the kickstarts was The Hobbit. My fourth grade teacher read me The Hobbit. And all of a sudden, I realized, because my family life was difficult, as most family lives are, there was this out that of the imagination, of fantasy, of other realms, of alternative realities. So I began exploring that, and that went into spirituality, and it also went into just creativity. And I found peace, not peace, I would say, elegant. Agitation that was always there, and where it was just a gush factor that wanted to find an outlet. And through my working life, I never worked for anybody else. I always found, part-time jobs, or I would sell on street corners, or everything from lobster tails on Highway 101 out in California to New York City, and made my livelihood enough so I could live to have another day as a creative. And, I follow the heart, which is bad for careers.
Right.
Career is not something I relate to. I would, I'd get excited about a song, and I'd do that, and then I'd do a poem, and then, and eventually, as I got married and got a bit more grounded, I started realizing that this was no way to, you have to sort of start imposing discipline on this radical agent. I was able to funnel it more specifically towards writing and books and poetry. I also have a children's novel. I have just amassed all kinds of stuff that may never get out there, but I sure had a hell of a time doing it. And eventually, you know, this I am speaking to you because, like so many others, you know, I've been sort of off the grid, just spiritually, mentally. Not a misanthrope. I don't hate people. I don't have a beard that stretches down to the ground, and beard and birds flying out of my head. But you know, I heard the clarion call. I've been politically active. I have a 501c3 that has worked with the homeless, all that stuff. But I had a book that I had written years ago that had had signed an option deal for movie film, and it was just sitting around waiting for the movie to happen, and then I would get a big movie book deal, and I was waiting and writing and doing this, and finally it was like, okay, that's it. And then so I decided to launch this Karma Factor book, which is why I'm talking to you now. I have a publicist that sends stuff out. I'm trying to learn to get my muscles up for the promotion of my stuff, which is not normally my style.
Right. People don't realize.
Here I am.
Exactly.
Here I am.
People don't realize. This is what I say. You know, people say, oh, well, you know, I've got the book in my hand. That's it. I've done all the hard work. And that's when the hard work starts. You know, getting it out there, getting the follow ups and everything like that. And people just don't realize that. You know, the writing is the easy part in a way, in comparison.
Well, you are so very right. The part where it's like, you know, a marathon runner that's in great shape and you just keep running and it's going and it's a flow and it's going and you don't having to deal with all the other world commercial and competitive and all that stuff. And I loved it. It was therapy for me. It was some writers I know, it's very, very hard work and difficult. I have been fortunate. It's been a flow ever since I was a kid. But hitting the hard stuff, when you go into the promotion and figuring out demographics and stuff like that, it's difficult. I agree.
Myself, as a lot of other people, obviously you start writing poets, then you put music on it, because after all, songs are basically poems put to music, you know, and stuff like that. And you create. I've done the children's stuff. I've done, well, these days I just do parodies, but, you know, do all the sort of stuff like that. But along the way, you actually penned a book called The Artist's Manifesto, which is something totally different.
Yeah, I know. You know, it's a great thing that I'm very hard to categorize, which I love.
Right.
But it's not, you know, it's like you could say, I am a this, I am a that. Yep. I just say I am and leave it there, you know, because there's too many things to fill in. But, yeah, I was in L.A. trying to get a rock and roll deal and had almost this and that. Meanwhile, I was, you know, hanging out, sitting in cafes with fellow artists and talking shop and complaining and didn't like this and that. And I just spent, you know, hundreds of hours sort of doing a survey without a formal survey.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just had accumulated enough, and I hired a marketing company to talk to musicians and actors and stand-up comedians, got a survey done, and then wrote this book called The Artist Manifesto, which is out of print. We sold every copy. But it was I was Tommy Appleseed. I went around with a bunch of books in my backpack and just would approach strangers and say, hey, man, want to buy a book? Not quite, but almost.
I will tell you a story about something like that. I went back home to England. This must have been about 12 year ago, 13 year ago, something like that. And I had a couple of my new YA book, you know, with me to take over for the family and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've ever been to the London airport, but you go through the custom.
Yes, I have.
Yeah, you know, then you go through the custom control and you're in like a little village. You know, there's mm-hmm. there's bars, there's restaurants, there's shops, there's everything, right? Well, the main place for sort of books and stuff like that in England, the sort of everyday shopping place, is a shop called W.H. Smith's, which is like a news agent sort of thing, you know, books and confectionery and stuff like that. Anyway, They had a display outside the shop, top 20 best-selling paperbacks, with a couple in each. Well, I was sitting there, my flight had been delayed for a little while, and I noticed that slot 14 was empty. So
I hear this one coming.
it's true. I did. I sidled over, and I put three or four of my books in slot 14. And I then sat down and waited. I waited there, and sure enough, in about half an hour, somebody came up and they were looking through, and they picked a copy of that book up, went up to the checkout to pay it, and this poor woman was trying to scan the barcode. And she
Oh, that's
typed
classic.
it in and everything, and it didn't go. I mean, I had to go because I was laughing.
That is priceless. Someday you'll do your memoirs, and that will be one of the lead stories.
People wouldn't believe it. I've got on my list this year to do a stand-up comedy thing. And the thing is, I don't have to tell jokes. I just have to tell, being a senior citizen, I just have to tell stuff that my wife and I run into with senior citizens.
Yeah.
They wouldn't believe it. You don't have to tell the jokes.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I totally know. That's great.
But you as you said about this book, which, is option for films and everything like that, this is a genre I haven't come across before. I mean, genres to me are just like slots on a shelf. It doesn't mean a lot.
Right.
Metaphysical thriller.
Yeah.
I mean, that's something I don't think I've ever had on the show before.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that.
I don't think I can't think of anything like that. And it's called the karma factor, as in
correct.
Karma being not you're going to be calmed down, but karma as it coming back to you.
Yes.
What gave you the idea for this?
Oh, that's a long one. Or not. As I was saying, I had, partly because of the difficulties or just the way my DNA is, I had a vivid imagination. And that vivid imagination, as I said, got enhanced by hearing about The Hobbit and various other things, and that led into reading about Eastern thought and whatever. So there was that track going on that was very intrigued by alternative realities and wisdom and things that were not so blinded by the hypnotic spell of most of reality as we know it. And so there was that track. But the other track is I was just a regular kid, and I loved shooting 'em ups and cowboys, and then that grew into action adventure, and so these two things, and I had begun writing as well as doing music, and I had the idea of something that had to do with karma, karma being a cause and effect, sort of spiritual cause and effect, what goes around comes around, and then. So I was wrestling how to put these two aspects of me together under one roof, and I found out about the Akashic Records, and the Akashic Records, have been around for a long time. There's various takes on what they are, but let's call them a database of past lives. That's one simple way of saying it. And this is there are people that do readings from this, and some of them are extremely skillful and will tell you the most profound things you can imagine. But for a book, and for an action-adventure book, I needed to make it into kind of like, with all the database of the incarnations of all these people through time, that this became, with a killer, for instance, if my hero detective sort of stumbles into this database, and he begins to try to find out who this killer was in the past. And in my little, how I was adopting it, so it was not complicated, it meant that you could go into this guy's karma file and find out what he had for breakfast on April 12th, 1827. Or you could find out, who he murdered in 11 B.C., and you could find out all these things, which would be like an expanded profile. Think about a police profile on a criminal suspect. He's been in jail here. He was born here. He had a girlfriend here. he, you know, got fired for all that kind of data, and then translate that into a database of all these past lives. And the premise was, or is, that you could find out where the guy was stuck. This is a serial killer that my
he's stuck in a slot. Okay, I see. Yeah, yeah.
Back, you know, let's say 300 years ago, he had this terrible thing happen to him, and he got caught in that loop, so that he's replaying that lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. He doesn't know he's doing that, but he's doing that. And if he goes to jail and he gets in prison or executed, he's going to come back and do it again. So the only way to really handle crime would be to figure out what it was way back when it first started with a guy, and get the guy to take the needle off the record so he doesn't keep repeating.
Right.
Right? And so this becomes the challenge, and this is where this cops and robbers, serial killer versus detective, it's 80% that, but then it's backlit by this whole thing having to do with the Akashic Records.
Wow.
and the hierarchy of elevated souls that are watching this and trying to figure out, you know, how to deal with crime, how to deal with the horrors that are going on with Earth, and it would have to be sort of one by one, but they could get key bad guys that are really stinking up the joint, to get off their own record. That was the premise. And so these two elements within me could find a home, and I spent years working on this thing. And finally, I heard the calling and decided to go get it published and get out there with it.
That's funny. You know, it's amazing how these things happen. About half an hour ago, when I was sort of setting up for the show and everything like that, I was sort of working on the recordings of the music shows, and I had the Moody Blues playing. Stepping in a time zone.
Interesting.
Exactly interesting. What we're talking about here, in a way.
Yeah, there are all kinds of little. There's a space. I just call it an alternative space.
Yeah.
Where you know things are really, really interestingly connected. The bird call here, dropping a book there, you're hearing a conversation there, and there's this symmetry. There's this connection point going on. It's just a way of perceiving. It's lovely.
Now, see, your poor detective, James Early. I mean,
yes.
This poor bloke. It gets in the way of, you know, a load of machine gun bullets, but he doesn't die. The bullets disappear. There's no blood. There's no wounds.
Yes.
There's nothing. I mean,
his
poor brain must have been fried just trying to understand that.
Well, yeah. I mean, that is. I don't know if you know McKee, but his premise. That's the inciting incident. That's what he's a guy that is really. He's hallucinating. He's going crazy. He's a major cop, but he's just falling apart interiorly, and he wants to take himself out. So he orchestrates it. So this guy is going to kill him. Basically, he steps into a hail of machine gun fire, but he's connected to these folks who are doing the karma stuff, the database of past lives. They need him to stay alive. So automatically, he doesn't know what's going on. The bullets are transmitted, and suddenly there's a bunch of bullets that come through a hole in the sky in New Mexico and clatter around, and birds fly into the air, and then it's done. And then he looks around, and he's still alive. He checks his chest. What's going on here? Anyway, the bottom line is he's going, okay, I've been saved. But why? What am I supposed to do with this? And that launches him into this whole storyline.
Wow. To me, it's intriguing just to sort of understand the concept. The way you describe it and everything, it makes you want to read it, just to get your head into the concept.
I would love it. The more the merrier. I've had really good response to it. And, I'm finding my way.
Well, that's great. Because not only that, you've got a album out as well, haven't you? Hotel Earth?
Yes, under the name of Tracker.
That's
my stage name. Tracker, T-R-A-K-K-E-R. And it's called Hotel Earth. It was something, again, that I spent years on because I had all these tunes that were burning a hole in my pocket, wherever one burns a hole.
Right.
I spent the time and the money to really do it right. I got 12 songs in there. And then, you know, I didn't promote it. I did nothing with it. So, but you can get it on Spotify and these other things. It is from Tracker, who is a character in the book as well.
Ah, okay. I wondered if I was just going to ask you if there was a link between the two. That's great. That's interesting, because one of the things I did last year, my bucket list for last year was to get some of my parodies recorded. Not in sort of a top thing, but you know, somewhere a karaoke thing where they did recordings as well. Because even though I sing them, you know, I'm not going to be around a huge much longer. So I think somebody's got to record them. So that's what I did last year, just so that they're there. You know, like you
just
say,
for your legacy.
Exactly.
For your legacy.
Yeah. Exactly.
You got them
in your head. But okay, cool. So what's your plans for this year? Is it still following up with this possibly getting it, you know, the film rights going on it?
Well, the film, you know, long story. We've had huge names come and go. Millions of dollars have been spent, and yet we don't have a script that anybody loves. and so it's going on, and so I've taken my attention off it. The main task ahead is just do everything I can to stay viable, to keeping the book, take, you know, whatever interviews, however I can play my hand in this strange new world for me, and get the book out there. Meanwhile, if and when I have time, I have the Artist Manifesto, the book we talked about. I'm doing a rewrite on that.
Right, yeah.
I'm almost done with that. I have another book of poetry I want to finish. You know, the list goes on and on. But I'll be doing this book largely for the next, who knows, bunch of years.
Well, the thing is, the more the book gets out there, the more interest might get pushed for the film rights, because you know it becomes better known in a way.
Yeah. Yeah, no, exactly. And, you know, meeting people that have, you know, I got really burnt out on the film biz. I was not happy with it at all. Everybody warned me. And I said, well, you know, if you don't like the heat, get out of the kitchen. Well, I've stayed in the kitchen. And you should see how fried my hair is. But
I saw.
Yeah.
I thought I must admit, I thought it was Leo Sayer to start with. But
yeah, boy, what a voice he had. But anyway, I'm hoping, you know, this will bring me into a community of people who are like-minded, who are decent, who have, you know, progressive values that I can start connecting with and sharing stuff and doing things with, and we'll see. It's an adventure.
Time's getting on, but before I run out of time, give us a brief rundown of the Helen Hudson Foundation.
Oh, okay. Real quick, my mother was a writer growing up. As I said, we lived in New Haven, and she, as well as getting a few books published, she was a relentless activist. I mean, she was everywhere doing everything, writing letters to prisoners, going to marches at Selma. I mean, you name it. I got that gene myself. And she also worked in soup kitchens. So while she was there in the 90s, she has departed since mm-hmm. then. But she interviewed, while she was working in the soup kitchen, she would interview the guests and got their stories. She'd set up a little microphone in a broom closet, and you know, wherever she could find a little space, and you know, ask them about their lives and what had happened. She compiled a manuscript called Dinner at Six, Voices from the Soup Kitchen. Her publisher didn't want to do it. It wasn't sexy. It wasn't really academic. It was just the raw words mm-hmm. from these folks. She did a beautiful job. And so I had read the book, and it was just too good and too important to let it just sit on a shelf. So I proposed to family that we print the book ourselves, and instead of making it a commercial venture, we make it a heartfelt adventure and give the books away to soup kitchens.
Right.
They, in turn, could sell the books and make money, and they would keep all the money. My mom, bless her heart, wanted no dime, no nothing. So we did that for 20 years. I would just find out about an organization with a drive over with a, you know, a trunk full of books, hand them off, mail them out, and no charge to anybody. And then when I moved up here to Providence, I took it with me, but we started a foundation.
Right.
And so that is the Helen Hudson Foundation. That's her pen name, Helen,
right.
Or was. It's Helen Lane. But so I've been, you know, the founder and the president, and basically we were doing a lot of work with homeless folks. We've branched out because there's so many hungry voices right now about the environment and racism and all
yeah.
the injustice and stuff. So I basically am making donations and grants and stuff like that with money that was from my grandfather that had been held in trust. So, I mean, I'm the luckiest guy in the world. I get to, you know, help out with just, you know, not deep pockets,
yeah.
but, you know, enough to help out.
That's great.
So that's what that's all about. Yeah, it's really a blessing.
Well, it's been a blessing having you on the show. Really enjoyed it.
And me too.
Enjoyed a good chat. But time goes by, so what I'm going to do now is hand the show over to you, Thomas, so you can tell everybody where they can find more about you and, of course, your books and everything else.
Hi, folks. Hope everybody's well. Hope they've enjoyed the show. The main instrument I have for, you know, stuff that I'm up to and doing is my website. And strangely enough, it's called thomaslane.com. I don't know how I pulled that off. There are a bunch of Thomas Lanes out there. Some of them are not such great people. They're one of the guys on the George Floyd
I read that. Yeah, I read that. Yeah.
It's a little scary. I am not him. I promise you. But anyway, you know, there I have the book and an excerpt from the book and reviews and blogs and write-ups. And then on the About page, I have a couple of videos. I just did a big mail out for the Martin Luther King thing. I have a video, a song. And I attended the March on Washington when I was a kid. And I had an amazing, amazing time there. And I wrote up something on that. There are paintings of mine that are kind of used as blogs. You can also go right to Amazon or Barnes & Noble. I'm there. And that's pretty much where it is. But the website is where you'll get, if you're interested, you'll get a bunch more information.
Indeed. Great website. Very educational.
Yeah.
Very, very good.
Oh,
well,
thank you.
Thomas, thank you so much for being a guest today on the show. I've been really, really enjoyed it. And good luck with the book.
Me too. Thank you, my friend. Good luck to you and all of you out there.
Thank you. Well, how about that? My guest today, Thomas Lane. Really interesting person. And it's good. It's a good website, thomaslane.com. Easy. thomaslane.com. Easy peasy, yeah? Well, that's it. I'll be back tomorrow with a fresh guest. But until then, as always, we've got one thing left to say. No, we don't. It's goodbye.